Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
I still remember one of my coaches gave me the best advice I ever heard. He said, once you make your decision, never look back. So if you decide to leave school, don't look back on it. Don't ever say like, oh, I wish I could have went back. Or don't say like, you know, maybe I should have went back. He said, it's the same thing if you go back to school. You know, don't look halfway through your season and say, man, I should have left. I should have went to the league. He said, don't, whatever you do, don't look back.
Welcome to 94 and More, presented by Bristol Studio. While a basketball court might be 94 feet, we believe it's limiting to solely look at this beautiful game as a sport. In our minds, it's closer to an art form, even a tool through which we can study the world and learn about ourselves. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and on this podcast, we will explore the game of basketball, not only as a sport, but as a dynamic force that influences culture, builds bridges, and has the ability to shape our national conversation. Hope you enjoy. As always, feel free to reach out to us at 94@bristol-studio.com and follow us on Instagram at Bristol Studio and at 94 and More Podcast. All right, let's get into the show. And today is a special day because Vic Law is back.
Yes, sir. It's about time to get it wrapped up.
And today our guest is Miles Boykins. Thanks for joining the show, Miles.
Thank you for having me, man. Appreciate it.
What has everything been like for you in these last few months?
Man, kind of just trying to relax a little bit, get my body back in recovery after the season, obviously. But it's kind of crazy because now, like, you know, people normally taking vacations on the NFL, but we can't because of COVID. So really just honing in, man, and just grinding, getting ready for this next season.
So does the in Chicago or are you in Baltimore?
No, I'm in Baltimore now.
Does the league not allow, they're not allowing you guys to take any vacations?
It's not that they're not allowing us to take vacations. It's just that we kind of can't right now because of COVID. I mean, not a lot of people are traveling. You know,
got you.
I'm talking about going out of the country and stuff. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Got you. So it's not something the league is like mandating with you guys. So can you talk a little bit about what that last season was like for you? Kind of that whole experience of playing a full season during a pandemic.
Yeah, it was hectic. I think we probably only had fans for about 4 or 5 games, getting tested every single day. I was tested every day from like August till January, late January, maybe even into February. But yeah, I was being tested every single day. Never had COVID. I had to sit out. I was actually like a close contact. So I had to sit out for 5 days, ended up not having it, but I didn't practice the whole week. I just did virtual meetings and then showed up on game day and played. It was kind of crazy and how everything went. You know, halfway through the season, then we had to start doing virtual meetings. We weren't allowed in the facility unless we were practicing. All of our meals we had to take pretty much to go. But yeah, I mean, honestly, it was just crazy. I'm thankful that, you know, it's over with. Hopefully we can be back in there and with people getting the vaccines and stuff, hopefully, you know, starts getting better.
Are you fully vaccinated?
No, I'm halfway. I got 2 more weeks. And
I'd be interested to hear how you react to that second shot. I've had kind of half and half people telling me that it hit them like a ton of bricks. And some people are just like, you know, it's fine. Obviously, being in Australia, the rollout over here really isn't too high. And there's no COVID here, so people aren't really jumping out to get it so as much as America. But I'm anxiously excited about getting the vaccine when I come back home.
Yeah, man. I think it's crazy because, like you said, like you out in Australia and y'all not even dealing with it. You said it is what it is. So it's crazy to me to even think that y'all just living like a regular lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, the first day kind of week I got here, I went to all their malls. Like if you want to go grocery shopping or anything, no superstores here, right? You kind of do everything individually. Like you want to go grocery shopping, there's a grocery store, or a market. You want to get electronics, you got to go to electronics store. There's no Target, Walmart. There is a Target, but it's just like Home Goods and, you know, kind of other stuff. It's not really like as, you know, big. So we went to some huge mall, and this is me just getting off the plane, get out of the quarantine hotel, and it's packed. Like, people are walking around, no mask. You see people in the, like, restaurants, like, shoulder to shoulder, eating burgers, sharing drinks. It was kind of wild to me. Like, I'm walking around with my gym, and I got my mask on. He's like, you can take that off if you want. I'm like, nah, I think I'm all right. I think I'll be okay until I get back. It's going to take me some time to get used to this.
Yeah, and I've been in California, so I've seen, like, total lockdown for a minute. And it's just crazy, like, start to feel California open up. And, like, that's one of those things that you just definitely didn't see happening. And it's kind of hard to imagine that we've gotten to this point where, like, we're finally, you know, places are taking down those glass walls that they have when you pick up your food. Like, you're able to now not wear your mask, like, when you're walking outside. So it's been crazy. But I want to go back to what you were talking about, your day-to-day experience. How tough was that for you? You know, being an athlete, you have such a routine that you've practiced for so long. How much did that affect your routine? Did it throw you off at all, having to add these new protocols into your routine?
It probably took me 2 to 3 weeks to get into the swing of things, because, like I said, like, I have to wake up earlier now to go get tested. You know, that's like knocking my routine off. Then I have to, you know, be spaced out from people when I'm in the facility. And then we had to wear these like mesh things, like these mesh like masks while we practiced. And that was, I couldn't breathe in it, man. Like, it was terrible. But the whole thing for me was just that, you know, whatever I had to do to get through the season, you know, I was willing to do. You know, I'll complain about it later. But that was the most important thing. As long as we had a season, that's what I wanted. Like I said, towards the back end, we started having fans and things were looking better. Hopefully, you know, things just, we kind of get a hold on things so we can play. I mean, I just want to be able to have fans. It was crazy, like, playing a game with no fans, right? It's really ridiculous.
Why? Yeah. What was that? Yeah. What was that like when you ran out there for the first time and you looked around and you're like, oh, it's dead quiet. There's nobody here.
See, that's the thing. I really thought it would be worse than what it was. The only time it's bad is during warmups. When you warmed up and there's no, like, you got music playing, but there's no crowd. It's just like, wow, like, we're really in an empty stadium. Because once the game starts, you locked in. Like, I don't care what you say. Like, Vic, you could probably agree with that. Like,
Yeah.
Once it's going, you're going.
Yeah. Once you're playing, you're playing. It don't matter.
But what something was different in the NBA was, I don't know if the NFL did this. I guess you can kind of talk to this. But the NBA tried to, I'm sure you saw the tweets, they tried to put in, like, sound effects from 2K. They did, you know, the virtual boards around the court where, like, family and friends and fans could sit in, like, on Zoom and watch. So it was, like, weird, right? But you still had, like, faces watching and stuff. And then on top of that, they would, like, play music in different, like, periods of the game to, like, get energy in there. And then they would try to, like, just pump in these automated, like, chants and applause, I guess. It was kind of weird, but, like, I guess that was just, like, the norm that we had to get used to.
Yeah, no, they had certain rules. So, like, they could play music and stuff, but they couldn't play fan noise. They couldn't pump in, like, crowd noise unless there were actually fans there. So if there's a certain amount of fans there, then they could pump it in. But if there was no fans there, they couldn't pump it in.
Then it just had to be quiet.
Yeah, it just had to be quiet.
How does that look for you, like, when you guys are because I know for me, like, a big part of last year when I was in the bubble, our coach is telling us, like, you know, being a professional, like, this is going to be even more of you guys having to motivate yourselves to kind of go out there and play. And I know last year was your rookie season, right?
No, last year was my second. It was my second
year. Second year. Even still just being a young guy, I know, like, it's still kind of your role and kind of, like, excitement is still there, right? Like, you're still just juiced to, like, be on the field and have this huge, you know, accomplishment and blessing. But how does that look for the locker room, especially, like, with older guys trying to prepare themselves and get hyped to play with no kind of buzz or energy around the stadium?
I mean, the thing about it really is, and I'm sure you could attest to this, is just, like, you know, I was on a team with professionals. Like, that's our job. So
yeah,
if you got a job getting hyped to play your sport, then odds are you probably shouldn't be playing anyways. But like I said, the hardest part was warm-ups. And, you know, warm-ups are warm-ups anyways. So as soon as the game started, everybody was locked in. Everybody was pumped up. You know, that's how I always saw it. Because even when the stadium is packed, like, during games, I'm locked in. I don't even realize them anyways.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to have, like, you go to the bench and sit down.
What about in terms of, like, your own, you know, we talked a little bit about your preparation and how the protocols started to affect that. But what about for you working to, you know, cement yourself in the league in your second year and to grow from your first year? How difficult was that to then focus on yourself when there's so much else going on outside of the sport, so much else starting to creep into the sport, just so much going on in the world during that time?
Yeah, to be honest, for me, it made it easier just because I didn't have like an outside distraction, if that makes sense. So we weren't staying in a bubble. So I knew like I couldn't just be doing, you know, going to the grocery store or doing like crazy stuff like that, going out on weekends. I literally had nothing to do but like sit in my house and study my playbook and just go over stuff. I go to the facility and back, and that's it. I guess it was kind of a blessing in disguise in one way, because, you know, it just really allowed me to focus on stuff where before, you know, I might have been, you know, oh, I'm gonna go chill with a teammate tonight, or, you know, I'm gonna go, I'm gonna have my parents out to come visit me or my brother, you know, but I don't have to worry about us. I was just all locked in on the game.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing, right? It was such a, there's so much bad stuff happening that if there was any way to kind of really think about it and find something good in it, like a silver lining, something to build from, that's really important. But I want to go back to, you know, your early days. Was this the dream? Was being an NFL player something that you always hoped for?
No, I wanted to play basketball. Basketball is my sport. Was my first love. I think it's probably everybody's first love.
But yeah.
I played against Vic a couple of times, man. And like,
oh yeah,
it's crazy because I could hold my own because I was athletic and stuff. But like, when I got to playing like them boys, like I could have played in college nowhere near the level that y'all was playing at. But like, I played against Vic, and like most other people, like I said, I could guard. Like, to me, like when we played Jaw, like I would have rather guard Charles than guard Drew, because at least like I was close to his height and like I could contest his shot. But like, bro, like I had my hand in your face, bro. You still shooting over me, bro. There was nothing I could do about the situation. There was nothing I could do about it. And I'm not short, bro. I'm 6'4". There was just nothing I could do about the situation.
Yeah.
So
Jake, let me tell you about Miles. Miles in high school, let me tell you, man, he went to Providence. And when I tell you, every time we play Providence, we'd be like, just stop Boykin. If we don't do nothing else, just stop him. He, alone, like by himself, was a problem. They always had a chance in the game just because of him. So he's being a little modest, saying, you know, he couldn't have played. I think he could have, you probably could have played pretty high D1 had you kept just stuck with basketball, just because you were that talented. But, you know, I'm happy that you chose football and it's gotten you to where you've gotten to.
Absolutely. But no, like I said, bro, I love basketball. I love playing against y'all too. We ain't beat you until you left. So I can't pull that out. But no, like I said, I love basketball. I still watch basketball to this day, man. But you know, I like tons of respect, because obviously I played against guys like you, and I know how hard it is to make it to that level and be productive on that level. And that's why, you know, I love basketball. It was my first sport.
So what was it that made you focus on football? You just kind of got to a place where you felt like that was your better, you know, chance of having a professional career, and pursuing something outside of school was through the NFL and through football.
Yeah, I was just better at it, and I love football too, don't get me wrong. It's just basketball was my first sport, so that's always what I, you know, was attached to. And then when I started really like learning how to play football, it just became my best sport, and so I rolled with it, and you know, the rest is history.
Even like we're going back to like, I'm talking about potty training and little tight swims. when you first were getting into sports, right, and you're learning basketball, football, what do you like? What would you say like think, dreaming, right, envisioning it all? What was like your first welcoming into basketball and welcoming into football? Like, how did you even say like, this is what I want to do, or this is what I want to try?
Ever since I can remember, it was always, I started with basketball. My dad was a football player, but I started off playing basketball because my dad didn't want me to play football. So, you know, I still remember like my mom, you know, I'd be like in the basement. I make my mom like flicker the lights and I come like running down the stairs and she announced my name and stuff like that. And I'm playing on the tight rim with my older brother. And that's probably my earliest memory of basketball. But ever since then, like I said, I had been playing basketball. And then, you know, I got a little bit older. And I see all my boys playing football. And I'm like, I want to play football. My dad's like, no, you can wait till high school. And finally, you know, my parents just caved and they let me play. And then I turned out to be good at that too. So then it was just between those two, which one I wanted to play
more. How old were you when you first started playing football?
I was fifth grade.
Fifth grade.
And I was actually, bro, it's crazy. I was actually on the B team in fifth grade. They put me on the B team. But I've never played football before, so I didn't really take it as disrespect at the time. Bro, yeah. My team was so good. They took us out of the B league and put us in the A team, like the A team playoffs.
There you go. Hey, that's probably a chip. That's the chip you carry with you, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, man. I was on a B team in fifth grade, man. I'll never forget that.
So take us through like more of that through, you know, high school playing both sports, and then kind of how you got into the college recruiting process and kind of what that whole experience was like for you.
I was always playing AAU over the summer. I'm actually shocked I didn't play you. Vic, what AAU team was you on? You was older anyway, so you probably.
Man, let me tell you, when I was young, I started off on the South Cook Jaguars. Then I was on the South Suburban Magic. And on both of those teams, you know, you're playing almost shirts and skins. I am not even going to sugarcoat it. You know, you just kind of playing just to have fun. But when I was in about seventh to 16U, I was Mac Irvin Fire.
Okay, yeah. So I played against Mac Irvin, but I never played against your team because you was on the older team. But then when I was like my freshman or sophomore year, they asked me to play for Mac Irvin. And my mom, like, this is when I realized that I wasn't going to play basketball. Because my mom mm-hmm. sat me down and she said, like, if you do this, because, like, the people who I've been playing with, like, my boys from, like,
you just playing your friends, right?
Yeah. We were good. I mean, they all went to Providence, so that's why we had chemistry and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But my mom said, like, listen, if you do this, you have to play basketball because you leaving your friends. And if you go play for Mac Irvin, you know, those are people that want to play in college. So don't do mm-hmm. that. If you're not going to play in college, then don't do that. And so that's why I decided to stick with my boys and just, you know, play. We still played against good teams. We played against Mean Streets, Mac Irvin, all that. Yeah. And just, like I said, I had a blast when I was competitive with it too. But I knew I wanted to play football. So
it's interesting that you say that because probably you 100% is right. Had you gone with Mac Irvin, I mean, you would have went on EYBL circuit. Colleges would have seen you, and it would have like opened doors to you that have been like, all right, if basketball really is your love, all right, here's your avenue to really chase your dreams. So, you know, props to mom for kind of coming in there and saying, look, man, if this is what you want to do, this is what I'm going to do.
She knew it, man. She knew it. Because I was like, oh, this is dope. Like Mac Irvin, like that's all you hear about growing up. I'm sure you had the same.
Sure.
Yeah. I was like, that, man, I'm thinking about doing this. I don't know. Yeah. All my boys, they gonna hate me. Now my boys wouldn't hate me. Like they just want to be happy for me, see me succeed, mm-hmm. all this other stuff. Right. At the end of the day, I was like, nah, I couldn't do it.
So that even still, they probably would have still been hooping with you, man. It's all love.
Yeah, for sure.
True. So that kind of led you into that space of taking football more seriously and, you know, approaching it for college. What was that recruiting process like for you? Did you have a bunch of teams that you were looking at? Did you have one team in mind that you'd always kind of thought, hey, if I do consider college football, this is the program? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I loved Michigan State. Like, I always loved Michigan State. I loved their uniforms. I loved everything. They was winning the Rose Bowl when I was, like, I think, like, my freshman, sophomore year. So, like, I always mm-hmm. loved Michigan State. It was, like, one of the first schools to recruit me, like, my freshman year. And so, finally, I went up to go visit. I loved it. That was probably my second. Actually, my first visit was Northwestern. That was my first college visit.
Okay.
Then after that, I went to Michigan State.
Vic shaking his head.
I'm not even going to ask what happened with that one. I'm not even going to ask. I'm not going to ask because I should have known then because I would have tried to sell you on it.
Oh, don't. They ain't offering me. So you ain't had to sell me. That's probably my biggest, like, I hate Northwestern just for that reason. Northwestern okay. football, I should say.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But so I go to Michigan State. Loved it there. And then I go to Illinois. And then, like, towards the end of my, like, sophomore year, Illinois offered me. Then after that, Michigan State called me, like, I think after, like, my first game of my junior year, they offered me, and then a bunch of other schools came up. But as soon as Michigan State offered me, that was pretty much my team all the way through. And then Notre Dame, I didn't even like Notre Dame. My quarterback did, and he said he wanted to go visit and check it out. So I said, whatever, man, if you drive, like, we can go do this. So went down there, it's freezing, and I love Notre Dame too. Still, man, like, Michigan State's still my top, and I have been to Florida, been to Missouri, Ohio State, Michigan State, like all these other places. Like I said, Michigan State is still my favorite. And so probably with like a week left in my recruiting, I took a visit to Michigan State one last time and then Notre Dame one last time. And then I switched my mind literally probably about 2 days after visiting Notre Dame for the last mm-hmm. time and said, yeah, this is where I want to be.
What led to that switch? What was it, if you recall?
I think just maturity. I started maturing and thinking, you know, there's a lot more I could do going to Notre Dame if I don't go to the NFL. So it was more mm-hmm. about the degree and just the school. And I know Vic can talk about that too, man. That's why you choose Northwestern. Like, shoot, yeah. You know, when the day you're done playing basketball, bro, you got a connection. You got people that can Absolutely. Help you out. You got a network. So that was my biggest thing when I chose Notre Dame. Yeah.
And what were your, what was your kind of favorite experience going to Notre Dame? Like what is one of the takeaways you would say Notre Dame kind of taught you and that you're still applying today?
Honestly, going to Notre Dame, it made me comfortable around anybody. Like, I feel like I could step into a room and have a conversation with anybody, you know. There's so many people that are there that are just, you don't even know who they are until you're talking to them. There's, right. you know, like right. governors, kids there, there's billionaires, kids there. Like, you really don't even know who you're talking to until, like, you sit down and have a conversation with them. That's why I felt like it was huge for me, just because, not even a confidence builder, but at the same time, like, we look at sports and say, okay, we can compete on any level in sports. But then now I have that confidence that I can step out of sports and, you know, compete on any level. And then too, like, I'm going to school with some of the smartest kids in the country, just like you are. And, you know, we taking the same classes, we doing the same things. And so for me, it was just, you know, being able to realize that I can really compete in anything that I put my mind to.
All right.
What were your interests there outside of sports? What were you studying?
Marketing.
Some of the courses you were taking? Marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. I graduated in marketing.
Did you have a specific angle in marketing that you were interested in that kind of led you down that path, or are you kind of just generally interested in the idea of a marketing yeah. you know profession?
Yeah, I used to want to do sports marketing, and then took a couple classes on it. And I didn't really like that. I'd rather do product marketing that's like with sports.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm done playing football, like, I want to be done, you know, really with really with sports. But I could do stuff like if I work for like Gatorade, Nike, like stuff like that, mm-hmm. I could do. Like, that's easier for me to rather than like working for a team and doing sports marketing. That makes sense.
What is it about that kind of, you know, turns you off from the idea?
Man, it's just a lot that goes into it. I didn't realize how much work sports marketing actually is, rather than, you know, and plus, like, my whole life is sports now. That's what I've been doing for 24 years.
Yeah.
So I feel like when I'm done with it, I just want to try something new. You know, I could always go back into sports if I want to, but at least to start off with, I wouldn't want to be in it.
That makes a ton of sense. But I'm just like that. But I would say, so you're telling me, even if you have a star-studded son playing football, you're not going to coach?
No, see, that's what I'm saying. I would for sure want to coach, man. I'll for sure coach. I want to coach the basketball team. I don't know if I want to coach his football team, though. Because, imagine being a coach and, bro, like, having, like, an assistant coach that's trying to tell you to do something. Like, bro, you didn't play in the league. How are you going to tell me something that you don't know about, bro? Like, you going to feel that way if you're coaching your son playing basketball?
Right.
At a certain level, you just got to stop. I feel like I just got to stop. Like, I coach basketball all the way through, but if football, I got to stop at some point.
Yeah. I think with basketball, I was just telling my dad, like, if I have kids that play basketball, I cannot be like the parent that's just way too involved. Because I just know how I am. Like, I'm going to get like,
I know.
I'm going to see them getting trained. I'm like, that's so nah, just gonna sit back, let them learn, and just help where I can. But I'm not gonna be too into it, because like you said, once I'm done with basketball, my life has been so just intertwined with sport, with the injuries and all the commitment and like just time it's taken. I love it, but once I'm done, like, I just want to pour everything I got into it, and when I'm done, I'm just done. Like, I don't want to have to feel like I'm just still attached to it throughout everything.
Straight up, that's the best way to put it, man.
Yeah, you say that now, but I have a feeling that it's going to be a lot tougher. Once you are removed from the game, once you do get away from it for the first time in your life, it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be weird, because it's such a huge part of your identity. You know, it's something that's dominated, you know, for both of you guys, it's something that really dominates your life, that I can imagine it'll be an interesting transition once it's no longer, you know, at center stage.
See, it's funny to me that you say that, because I don't have, and I wonder if Vic feels the same, because I feel like people who go to schools like that, like, you go to Northwestern, like Stanford, Notre Dame, like, you go to school like that. For me, when I'm done playing football, I'm not nervous about like what my transition is going to be like, because I, like, at the end of the day, I feel like I'm going to be doing what I want to do, not what I have to do.
You're right.
So when I'm done playing, it's not going to be, I don't know what the transition will be. I'm sure it's going to be hard, but
of course,
it's like almost like I'm eager to start the rest of like my life and like see what else I
try something different.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think what you said, you both sought out programs that set you up in more ways than one. So you weren't reliant on just the sport aspect of your college experience. You had you had both. You had the classroom, the education, and you also had the on the field experience.
Right. Exactly. That's pretty much what it is. That's why I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say concerned, but I just like, I bring on like the next chapter of my life, you know?
I mean, it's a blessing, right? Like, I feel like, and even maybe not so much as Notre Dame, right? Because Notre Dame football is known for being a powerhouse. But when you go to a school like Notre Dame, Northwestern, Stanford, Harvard, like any school with a good academic backing, And you, then you're blessed on top of that to make it to a professional level, right? Like you exit that level with a certain security that you're like, you know, I'm now the kind of the world is my oyster type of thing, right? Like you have the degree, you played your sport, and now you're not like pressed or worried, like, oh, I gotta find a job right now. And so Jake, when you say, like, it's interesting that you say without sport is gonna be kind of, you know, it definitely will be a culture shock for a little bit, right? Like even being hurt right now without being able to touch a ball or do stuff, like, it's weird to me. But I don't know. I'm super excited too to like be done, kind of have a family, like not have to coach or like just worry about like I gotta just wake up at 7 and lift or play so well all the time. Like I can just relax and take a deep breath. And it's funny because I look at my dad who's retired now, who played, and I'm just like, how can you just sit on that couch and just watch TV all day? And I'm telling you, now that I'm in Australia and I'm this close, like being like, I'm ready to come home to see my family, I understand it now, because I can't wait to go back to my house and sit on the couch and just relax.
I feel you. I feel you on that, man. I feel you on that.
But Miles, so can you take us through a little bit more about, you know, your on the field experience at Notre Dame, what that was like, how long you were there, and just kind of what led up to your decision to go pro?
Yeah, I redshirted my freshman year, which we were loaded at receiver my freshman year. We had Will Fuller, we had Corey Robinson, Torrey Hunter. We had a really good team my freshman year, which, I mean, it's crazy. Like, that's just part of the transition. So, like, of course, like, I was mad, you know, trying to figure out what I could do to get better, just grinding. My sophomore year, I broke my finger like a week before our first game. So I ended up playing the whole season. Well, actually, okay, I gotta walk it back even more. After my freshman year, spring ball, freshman year, I broke my finger. Whatever. I had surgery, and then I finished spring ball. Finally, I get I'm 100% back. Then during camp, going into like my sophomore year, so right before the season, I broke my finger again. On the same finger, the same hand. It was just like a little bit higher up because I had 3 screws still in my finger. Yeah. So now I don't have to get surgery this time though, but I can't bend my finger. So I'm playing the whole season with a broken finger.
Which is insane. Crazy. As a receiver, and you got to catch the ball. I'm sure every time that ball is thrown your way, like, it's hard to not think about it. I'm sure the adrenaline helps, but still, you know you're playing with a broken finger.
Absolutely, man. Play with 2 fingers taped the whole sophomore year. So it is what it is. You know, that's adversity. I was going to play through it regardless. So then my junior year comes, we get a whole new staff on the offensive side of the ball. So we get a staff. The staff brings in, he brings in some transfers. And pretty much like the whole spring I had been starting, you know, and then he brings in these transfers, and then transfers get here in July or whatever. And then we go to camp, and then they're starting now. And so, like, I'm sitting there, like, thinking, like, damn, like, I didn't even get a chance to, you know, prove what I could do when I'm fully healthy. And you just brought in transfers, which I get it. That's part of the game. You bring in transfers, they got to play. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't bring in transfers to sit on the bench. It don't make sense. So, for me, it was just more about being attentive every day, doing what I could. You know, I'd still play, but it wasn't, you know, the type of playing time I wanted. I wasn't making an impact the way I knew I could and the way I wanted.
Right.
And so, you know, probably 3/4 of the season, people start getting hurt. I'm back to playing more. I'm playing well. And then the bowl game comes. We got only 3 receivers for the bowl game. Everybody else is hurt. So this is going to be the first time I'm actually, like, starting for Notre Dame.
Yeah, with all that pressure, too.
Yeah, against LSU.
The bright lights. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's
– perfect.
I'm excited, though. It's a bowl game.
That's when it's fun. Those games are when it matters the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go out there, and – I had 100 yards, had a game-winning catch, won MVP of the game. And after that, I never really looked back. I mean, I think I just earned everybody's respect after that game. So we go into, like, my senior year. I'm just balling. I balled my whole senior year. Then it comes to the end of the year. And, like, we went undefeated. We go into the playoffs. We lose in the playoffs. And that's when I had to make a decision whether I wanted to leave or come back to school. And, you know, I looked at my options and realized that, you know, it was just time for me to move on. So
can you take us a little bit more in depth in that? What were those options you were looking at, really kind of thinking deeply about, that helped you make that decision?
Yeah, to be honest, what it comes down, at least for me, I don't know, you know, what it is in basketball, but for me, it came down to do it. Okay, am I healthy right now? Yes, I'm healthy. Am I confident about what I put on tape this past season? Yeah, I was confident about that. And then it comes down to, okay, wherever I'm projected to go, is it worth me, you know, leaving college for? Is it enough? And so for me, it was. I felt confident where I was going to get drafted at. And, you know, like I said, I just felt confident in myself. So I was ready to leave. I felt that going back to college, you know, there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
And as much as I love Notre Dame, I just, you know, I couldn't take that risk.
Yeah, no. And what was the projection? Do you remember what you projected at before you entered into the draft?
Yeah. So, like, you get to talk to agents. They get, like, your draft grade. The school gives you your draft grade. Like, so Notre Dame gave me my draft grade, and I came back as a second round to third round pick, and which is exactly what happened. I went in the third round.
Yeah.
What was that like? I really want to, like, for anyone that's ever played sports, we've all had that dream where your name is called on draft night. Mm-hmm. And I still have dreams about it. Like, you know, I think sometimes I think I'm at that age again. You know, you never know. It's hard for me to accept it's never going to happen. Especially when I was watching the NFL draft the other day, I was like, man, it'd be crazy if my name was called. What was that like? Like, really, as someone who just grew up playing sports and loving it, to see, to get that call, to hear your name, for that whole thing. Take us through it.
Well, I think it starts with, so after you make that decision to leave, I still remember one of my coaches gave me the best advice I ever heard. He said, once you make your decision, never look back. So if you decide to leave school, don't look back on it. Don't ever say like, oh, I wish I could have went back. Or don't say like, you know, maybe I should have went back. He said, it's the same thing if you go back to school. You know, don't look halfway through your season and say, man, I should have left. I should have went to the league. He said, don't, whatever you do, don't look back. And that was the best advice I could have ever got, because as soon as I left, they start doubting, like you start doubting, not doubting yourself, but just doubting, like, damn, did I make the right decision? Like, maybe I should have went back, you know, because there's so much time between when you leave and the draft. Yeah. And so on draft night, you know, I'm waiting. I knew I wasn't going to be a first round pick. So whatever, watch the first round. Then day two comes. It's just second and third round. So second round goes by. I had a chance to go in the second round. I didn't go by. I was like, I'm not tripping, whatever. You know, I'm going to go third. Third round is going by slowly but surely. And it just seemed like every team that had a chance to pick me was just, you know, just picking somebody else. They didn't pick a receiver, or maybe they picked a different receiver. Yes. And at that time, bro, it was just such a stressful night for me. Like, I'm sure a lot of people will tell you, like, draft night is not fun until you get picked.
Pick knows. Yeah.
It's not a fun experience.
Like, so my phone starts ringing, and it's an unknown number. And so I pick it up, of course.
And then or you that's just when don't answer it.
Yeah. That's when they finally tell me that it was cool, because Baltimore's like, you're not going to see your name for a little bit, but we just traded up to get you. And we traded up like 10, 15 spots, and we're getting ready to pick you right now, but you're not going to see it for a while because we had to trade to get you. So whatever. And so at that moment, I remember like the biggest thing about it was I didn't feel excited in that moment. I felt relieved like that my name finally got called.
Yeah.
So I was just like, so just relieved. And my mom is crying. Like, my folks is happy, but I was just relieved. Like, it didn't sink in until like a couple hours later. Like, I'm like, finally, like, man, I'm so happy that I get a chance to live out my dream. And that's the biggest thing for me, man. I don't take any time that I'm in this league for granted, whether I'm here for a day or I'm here for, you know, 10 years. You know, for me, it's just, it's a dream. Like, I get to live out my dream, and not many people get to sit up here and say that they lived out their dream. So for me, it was extremely humbling, and I was just blessed to be in the position I am. So, yeah, but draft night, stressful. It's not.
In that whole, in that whole draft night, are you getting like, because I talked to some of the Northwestern guys, are you getting calls like throughout the night from different teams? Like, yeah, we're thinking we might take you here. We're thinking about like.
See, no, because that stuff doesn't start happening until like day three. So like day three is a shit show, because you're picking from all the way from the fourth round to the seventh round. And then right after that, you got to get the free agents too. Mm-hmm. So you can like, if you're going on day three, you literally don't know. So like I knew that going into it. So I'm thinking like, okay, if I don't go in the third round, there's a chance I could like not get drafted, which is not the end of the world, but it's just like you're sitting on pins and needles for 3 days straight, like not knowing what's going to happen to your future. So it's just a lot of thinking that you're doing when you don't have to be. Because so I was sitting there, my phone is silent, like my agent not texting me, nothing. We just chilling, he said, just wait, you know, we're confident, be confident in the draft, be confident in yourself. And finally, just happens. But like, no, man, I hear those type of nightmares, like coaches. And that's what I would hate, man, because I know some of my boys, like they're calling, the coaches are calling them saying like, okay, we're thinking about taking you here. Like, don't call me unless you're going to pick me, because I got my whole family. I got my whole family with me. Don't, Yeah, don't do all that.
And you wait on that one call, and when that one call comes, and they're saying, "Oh, we might," that might is not for certain. Yeah,
exactly, bro. It's terrible because that's your life at that point, bro. That's what you've been waiting your whole life for. And so, I guess, trust me.
That's Did you have a big draft party or not?
No, man. I was just chilling. Knowing me, I played it safe. I went to a restaurant with my family on day two, like when I thought I was going to get drafted. Just because I didn't want to be a person who threw a party and not get drafted.
Yeah.
So then I had a party day three after the draft was over. So I had everything covered. So even if I didn't get drafted and I got picked up as a free agent, I still had a party after all that stuff would have happened.
Yeah.
So it still would have been like exciting.
Yeah. You were prepared.
Yeah, man. I was prepared because some crazy stuff happens in the draft, man.
So once you got the call and it kind of settled in that this is your new reality, you're a professional football player in the NFL and you're going to the Baltimore Ravens, a Super Bowl contending team with Lamar Jackson as the quarterback. Like, when did you really start to get excited about, the opportunities and the possibilities that existed by going to an organization like that?
Man, I probably got excited about it probably 2 days after. Because after that, you still think like, damn, I can't believe, like, I'm really in the NFL. Like, I can't believe it. Like, I'm really
crazy. About to do this. You're going to have a jersey with your name on it. Your friends and family can buy it. Like, I can't imagine how long that takes to kind of settle in.
Yeah, it took like 2 days for me to get those thoughts out of my head to, okay, I'm in the league now. Okay, I got to, I got to go ball, man. This is my job now. I got to take this a lot more serious in college, a lot more serious than anything I've done in my life because this is my life now. And so I fly out there a week later, have rookie mini camp and, do my thing at rookie mini camp. And I'm just, excited. I'm just blessed, bro. Every time I go out there, I'm just happy to be playing the sport. And then I get hurt. So then I have to sit out all the OTAs. And finally, I go into camp and I get to, my first practice is in camp with like the vets. So, and ever since then, like I kind of hit the ground running. So for me, it was just, adjusting to how to play with them, how to play on the NFL level. And I'm still adjusting to that to this day.
Yeah.
It's, it was a slower process for me. But like I said, I don't have any regrets about anything that I've done. I love being in Baltimore. I love this team and I love playing this game. So, I can never have any regrets.
Describe your rookie season to us. Was there a learning curve for you or do you for think sure. you kind of got right in and fit right in?
No, for sure. I mean, I played every game my rookie year. I started the majority of my games my rookie year, but it's crazy because it's still an adjustment. It doesn't matter. Like I've never been. So was that my rookie year? Yeah, it was my rookie year. I've only been like, I don't even want to use the word starstruck, but I've only been like, wow, like I'm playing against this person twice. And the first time, both times against the Patriots, which is crazy. The first time was when I'm playing against Tom Brady, and I'm just watching Tom Brady. But then the second time, which is really what was crazy for me, is Cam Newton. Because Cam Newton was like, that was my idol growing up, bro. Like, Cam Newton was huge to me. So I'm really playing against Cam Newton right now. Like, this is crazy. And you have like little moments like that, like playing against like Richard Sherman or like being on the same field as guys like that. It is like crazy. It's like, damn, like I'm really on the same like, level as them. Like, I'm playing against these dudes, that I've been watching for so many years. So. For me, I think my rookie year, but to get back to your question, my rookie year was great. I mean, shoot, we only lost two games in the regular season. We thought we were going to win the Super Bowl that year, ended up losing second round of the playoffs. But it was such a learning curve for me just because, I learned how to handle my business in the NFL. I learned how to go about my business. I learned how to be a professional, truly. I thought I had a great rookie year in terms of what I could learn. And not even about just football, just life, There's a lot of things you learn once you leave college just about life in general. So,
That's a huge part of it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm learning about finances. I'm learning about,
of course.
It's crazy. Like I went to go get a car. Like, probably.
Oh man, that man that bought a Lamborghini.
I ain't buying a Lambo. But I get a car and I'm trying to finance it, and they're like, finance it. Like you don't have any credit. Yeah. I can't buy it. I don't have any credit. I'm thinking like, yo, damn, like. I never had a credit card, so of course I don't have any credit. Like, I got money, but I don't got any credit. So I had to buy it straight up. Like, and that's something I'm thinking about. Like, wow, like that's really like crazy for me to think about. Like, why did I went to Notre Dame and I didn't know?
Why did you get taught that?
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people who don't know that stuff too. So that stuff like people need to learn before you go to before you graduate. Like that was huge for me. Because if I wasn't in that position, like how else am I gonna get a car? I was lucky. I just had the money to like be able to afford it.
Yeah.
At that point, I was just like, damn, like, that was eye-opening to me. Like, if I was in a different position, this is crazy.
Yeah,
no, you got to say what kind of car you get. What was the first one?
I got a Tesla, man.
Yes, sir.
He cares about the environment. It's important.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Care about the environment.
This is just, and this is just funny. This is pro to pro. What was your first like?
Oh, pro to pro.
I guess pro to pro. There we go. Pro to pro to pro.
Come on now.
I guess what was your first kind of like, not stupid purchase, but your first like, I got a little bit of money now. I'm gonna treat myself kind of purchase.
Man, I would say that's the car, but I didn't even feel like that because I never had a car before, like in my life. Okay. So like, I got a car.
You needed that.
Stashed that away.
You needed a car.
Yeah, I need, you need a car, but I just got a nice one. So
you're good.
I want to say, man, my first, I wouldn't say it was just one thing because I never bought just like one big thing other than my car. But like, I'll just like, when I go shopping, I just like get what I want because I budget myself fine. Like I don't.
Yeah.
That's one thing about the pandemic that was good too. Like I had nothing to spend money on. So I
just, okay, so you've been saving, yeah.
I was just stacking stuff up, man. I just buy stuff. Like, I don't know, man, but it was great because like I signed with Nike. So I get a bunch of Jordans. I get a bunch of Nikes all the time. Yeah. So like whenever I spend shoes. Money, like, I just, the things that I want, I just get, man. And I just, yeah. I live within my budget, but I'm trying to think of something that's silly that I got, man.
That you Vic, didn't need. And you were like, you know what? Let me go ahead.
You can tell us of yours, and then that might help Miles.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Man. The worst thing the Magic could have did was sign me and bring me up the rest of the season. And like you said, like I have a pretty, like I got a financial advisor and I got a pretty good system of 80% savings and investments, 20% kind of like pay your bills, act like a stupid 25-year-old dude, like do what you want with it. And this is before I even got my first big check, right? In the NBA, when you go on road trips, like they give you a per diem, like, you know, they kind of give you money, kind of eat, do whatever with. And I had been saving mine. Like I just been like, you know, south side of Chicago, like I've eating Waffle House, like Subway. So, you know, I'm not going out eating big stuff. So I still got money, like I'm saving, right?
I remember you telling
me that. So we're in Atlanta and I got just straight cash. I got a ton of like this pretty much saved up. I'm like, man, you know what? And me and my teammates, and this is where they get you. And Jake, I haven't told you, but this is where the pro life gets you. It's usually not you that's just like, I need it. But when you're with your teammates, and usually the older ones, it's like, come on, go ahead and get it. So we're in Atlanta at the Lynx Mall. And my teammates are like, you know, Vic, I don't ever see you wearing no nice watch or nothing. Like, you know, you need something. So I'm like, all right. So we go in the first store, right? Jewelry store. And one of my vets kind of grabs his watch. He's like, yeah, like this is it right here, right? And I put it on, you know, the dude takes a link out, like fits it on me. I'm like, oh, this is nice. And he's like, so should I just ring it up? And I'm like, yeah, put that on.
Oh no.
14,000. Yeah, go ahead. Take that off. Take it off. It's burning me. Take it off. So I run to the Apple store and get an Apple Watch that I'm still using to this day. And I'm like, this $300 right
this
here.
This is my speed.
This is me right here. I can't get no diamond encrusted watch yet.
Now that made me bring up a funny story because it was a stupid purchase because like it just I didn't need it. But it wasn't that expensive. It was just expensive for like what I bought.
Right.
So like I was in Puerto Rico. Me and my boy went to Puerto Rico, and I didn't bring any swim trunks. Like we were staying at his house the night before.
You went to an island and didn't bring swim trunks.
Right. So my boy, that's exactly what my boy said. I said, bro, I'm gonna just buy him there.
Yeah.
I think I'm balling now. Like, this is my first off season. This is my first off season. I'm balling.
Right.
Whatever. So we get to the store the next day and we just shop and whatever. And I see some swim trunks I like. I don't know anything about these swim trunks. I just seen them and I get them. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna buy these. And my boy's like, so you're not even going like you don't even know how much they are. Like, what? You just don't
throw
buy
in
them?
The bag. Yeah.
He's like, you want to try them on? See if they fit first? I said, nah, bro, we don't check the price tags anymore.
Oh and my God.
Bro, I was just messing around with them.
Oh man.
I was just messing around. And don't get me wrong, like, the price of this wasn't that much. It was just four swim trunks. Like, think about swim trunks. So, whatever. Yeah. I'm going, you know, I ring them up. I'm looking at my boy, like, laughing and stuff like that. Like, I don't care about this, blah, blah, blah. So, he's like, yeah, that'll be, like, 300. I said, what? I'm about to spend 300 on some swim trunks. But at this point, it was too far for me to back down and be like,
yeah.
I ain't going to return them to the.
You have been talking that big game. We don't look at price tags. 300.
Well, I feel like I know. I know the brand. I feel like Liberquin or whatever.
I didn't see. No, I don't even know. I don't even know. I don't even know where they are now. Like, house in Illinois now.
The man said he don't even know where they are.
Man. But yeah, that hurt that day because I was just thinking like, man, I could have spent that $300 on something like so much better than that, than swim trunks.
On an Apple Watch. You could have got an Apple Watch.
I could have got an Apple Watch, man. But at that time, $300 on swim trunks, like I could have spent $50 on some swim trunks and they would have looked the same. Like, don't nobody be like, those are some fire ass swim trunks. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
I don't have vices though, Jake. Like, I'm a shoe guy. So I guess like, I spend money on shoes and like clothes.
No, you spend your money on Fortnite skins. You spend your money on Fortnite skins.
Oh, Lord. Oh, and I'm a gamer.
Honest.
If we had to be brutally honest, what I spend all my money on is clothes. Like, it has to be clothes and Jordans, like specialty shoes. Oh, funny story. Here we go. Here's a funny story. Here's a money thing. And so we're in Melbourne this past like month. And I had always wanted the Dior Lowe's, right? Always wanted them. Like, that was like the shoe I wanted. Like, it's my dream shoe. And so I go in the store with my teammate Tamri, and we're looking at them, and I see him, and I'm like, yo, there they go. Like, I've never, like, you know, they're never at stores. It's always sold out in America. Like, yo, there they are. I want them, right? And so we go up to him, and the dude's like, oh, yeah, $1,500. I'm like, I'm going to get them. Like, I'm going to get them, right?
So $1,500, that's nice. Like,
that's what I'm saying, right? So I'm like, I'm going to get them. And so I look at the size in it, and they're all in the European size, and it says a 46. And, you know, I'm Googling it, trying to see, like, is that a 13? I asked the guy, is this American 13? He's like, yeah. Yeah, he's kind of gives me, like, one of those. Yeah, because he wants the commission off the sale. So he's like, yeah, you can try it on if you want, right? So he gives me, like, the thin store-like sock, like the almost like pantyhose cut into a sock. So I put them on, and, you know, like, I probably, like, my mind is just, like, I got my shoes, like, yeah, like, they fit. I'm taking them. When I tell you, I put on, like, some, like, and the show is going to kill me for this, but I put on, like, some elites and, like, try to put them on. Like when I get back to the hotel room, you know, like a straight hooper, right? I get some elites on and try to put them on. Miles, when I tell you, my feet are screaming in these shoes. And I went there with my boy, and he's like, he's looking down at the shoe and looks back at me.
Like, damn.
And he's like, yeah, those might have to go back, huh? I'm like, nah, I got to keep them. Nah, I got to eat it. We didn't just go 30 minutes down the street.
You kept them?
I still got them. Of course I kept them. I'm going to have to buy some socks that's like this thin now just to keep wearing them.
That's the question. Have you worn them?
So I sucked it up and wore them at that game because I was out. So I wore them at that game that they played against Melbourne. And I, on the bench, tears in my forming in my eyes, like, I had to take them off halfway through the game. Like, I'm on the bench, just socks. I'm like, bro, these shoes, these ain't it.
Oh no,
they might just go on a mantle at the crib.
I'm the same way with shoes, man. I love shoes. Like, my favorite pair is probably my Travis Scott Air Force Ones, man. That's probably my favorite pair.
The lows or the highs?
Lows.
Yeah,
I don't even know how we got on this shoe tangent, but we're running out of time a little bit. So before we do, there's one more thing I want to ask you about, you know, the football experience. What was it like when you got your first catch in a game? And what was it like to get your first touchdown?
That's a great question because my first catch was my first touchdown. So
there you go.
My first game. We was playing Miami.
Your first game and your first catch was a touchdown.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
Man, we're playing Miami. And like I said, so I started this game. First game, rookie year, I'm starting. And it's crazy because this is the hottest game I ever played in. So before the game even starts, like, our head coach, Coach Harbs, is like telling everybody, like, hey, guys, we don't want you out there for warm-ups long. Like, you know, it's hot out there. You guys are going to be warm. You'll be fine. Like, just go light in warm-ups. Man, I was out there in warm-ups going 110 miles per hour, bro. It's my first game, bro. I'm damn near cramping coming back inside for the warm-up. Coming back inside from the warm-up. And we start off, and this was, like, the craziest game I played in my career because we blew them out. Like, it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. And I think I scored my touchdown in the second quarter, and I might have put us up by, like, 40, like, at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so by the end of the first quarter, I didn't know how I could play anymore. I went back to the bench. Like, my coach is like, how you doing? How you doing out there? I was like, Coach, hell, it's hot out here. The heat index had to be, like, over 100. It's humid in Miami. Like, you already know. And it's the first game of the season. So it was in, I think, August. So it was hot.
And on top of that, your first game, so you already like super hyped and excited to try and run around up there.
Yeah, ain't no reason why I need to be going 110% warm up. I know damn well I was warm already. Yeah. I was too warm. But I still remember the route. Like it was like an in and out. So I shook him at the top of the route, ran back out, and Lamar threw it back inside. So I dished back inside, caught it. They called a flag on the play actually too, and I thought it was on us. So I was gonna be so mad, like. Don't take my first touchdown away.
That's a tease, yeah.
So I didn't even celebrate it because I just saw the flag. I was like, man, damn, bro. But no, I scored, bro. It was hype, bro. And all my whole family was there. Like my boys traveled to that game. Yeah. I loved it, man. It was awesome. I'll never forget that.
It's incredible, man. You're gonna have plenty more touchdown catches. So
absolutely, we'll be watching.
That's the plan, man. I appreciate y'all for having me. It was fun.
Before we get out of here, Vic has a question for you.
Are we doing the Mount Rushmore?
You gotta do the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, we got – since he's a football player, we got to do both of them. Okay. First question will be, as a wide receiver in the NFL, who are the three wide receivers that you kind of look at that are like, man, these dudes are – you know, they kind of do it the right way. They're at the pinnacle of their game right now.
Right now, like in the league right now?
Yep, in the league right now. In the league right now.
Man, okay. I got to go – I got to go Julio.
Okay.
I got to go D-Hop. And see, that third one is so hard because there's so many other people on there. I'm gonna go Mike Thomas.
So when you see these guys play, are you just like, damn, that's a good route? Like, do you ever find yourself like, man, that's good?
I do, but I don't say it out loud. I can't.
No, obviously. I remember when I would watch the games last year, and I was like, huge Kawhi guy. Like when we played them, I'm a fierce competitor. Like I always, you know, whoever I want to play, I want to destroy, but. I've always loved like Kawhi's game, and just watching him out there. Sometimes I'm like, I'm up there looking at my other team, and I'm like, damn, that was a good move. I hope he misses it, but yo, that was a good move. Second question: your Mount Rushmore of basketball, top four all time.
All time.
Yep, and they have to be in order. It's no shortcut, and we don't do the no order. You know, no order. Just kind of top four, best four all time.
Okay. My top two are easy, bro. I'm gonna take MJ, then I'm gonna take LeBron. The only reason why LeBron is second, but because his career is not done yet. Like, so I can't,
well, you're from Chicago, 2 miles. Let me go ahead and say that.
hold on. But yeah, I am. But you, man, Chicago fans are delusional sometimes, bro. They're delusional sometimes in every sport.
Not wrong.
Every sport.
Well, that's true.
Not wrong.
He's not wrong. Right. He's not. But he saw Last Dance too. All I'm saying is Last Dance was a thing. You're from Chicago, and it's Mike. I think that's my only argument I need to make about Mike.
But I'm here's my problem, bro. When people talk about Mike, they act like he was just perfect. They act like he was flawless, bro. And that's not true.
Right.
That's not true. We get into that another day.
Yeah.
That's not true. But I would still put MJ top. MJ still won.
Fair enough.
Then, like I said, I'm going to go LeBron. I'm going to go Kareem.
Okay,
and this is where it get hard for me, man. This tough, man. Man. I think for me, after those three, I think like everybody had their moment because I think like to me, like Shaq is one of the most dominant players to ever play. So like I want to put Shaq, but then I want to put like Magic because like he was transcended to the game. You know what I'm saying? Like there's so many, you know, and that's why it's a toss up. But you know, I'm gonna go with Shaq.
Okay. Right.
Fair enough.
That was good. Jake, do we want to do a refresher and say yours?
I'm good. I'm good.
The fans have the fan. Come on, Jake. The viewers have not heard.
Mine's just Kobe. And that's it. Please go Kobe.
He's from LA, though. He's from LA.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's
just different for me. You know, I just grew up watching him, and it was just there was nothing like it for me.
That's how we feel about D. Rose.
Yeah.
You know what?
Tell me that D. Rose might have not been the best point guard to ever exist.
And we had – yeah, we had someone on the show earlier that said D. Rose was like a favorite player, and I respect that. If you're from Chicago, D. Rose is your guy. I totally respect that. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, sure. The thing is, Jake, you could have said Shaq at four. Like, you could have been a Kobe, Shaq.
I thought about it, but I said Kobe. Kobe deserved the fourth place vote.
As a Lakers fan, you have like six all-time greats on that franchise.
That's not my real.
You could have said LeBron too. I mean, LeBron isn't a Laker.
No, because right Lakers fans always go low-key hate LeBron, man. They have him there right now, but they don't really claim him.
That's true.
I appreciate
that's
him. True. I do claim him, but Kobe, it's just, again, right now how I feel, I'm just so appreciative for everything I got to experience watching Kobe as a kid. Absolutely. That like yeah. it obviously that's not my real list, but that's my emotional biased Lakers delusional list. So and that's the one Vic wanted to hear anyways. But again, Miles, thank you so much for joining the show. I look forward to having you back on, man.
No, thank you, bro. I appreciate y'all having me. It was fun. So
absolutely.
Of course. Good luck this season, man.
Yep. All right.
Thanks, boss.
Take care.
This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio, sound editing by Rashad Allen, music by James Grissom.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.